Hi, I'm Cameron McKenzie. I'm the editor-in-chief over at theserverside.com. And being the server side, servers are important to us, which is why I jumped at the opportunity to speak with James Faulkner, product marketing manager with Red Hat, or more specifically, Red Hat Runtimes, which is a big umbrella that includes a number of different products. The one that I'm most interested in, of course, is JBoss EAP, and of course, the open source project upon which it's based, Wildfly. And so I got a hold of James, and the very first question I'm going to ask to him is, well, what is the key difference between JBoss and Wildfly?
Wildfly is the upstream project that JBoss EAP is built on. Basically, Wildfly is sort of the, it's an open source upstream project, and a lot of new features that end up in JBoss EAP start their lives in Wildfly. And that's where we sort of, it's sort of a proving grounds for new features as they come in. And Wildfly is also released very frequently through the continuous delivery model. And so those features sort of get soak time before being productized as part of JBoss EAP.
Now, I know that JBoss EAP is open source, but is it free? Like, can developers use it for free? What is the cost for companies that want to use it in production?
Right. So you can use it for free for development purposes, JBoss EAP. So we have a subscription model at Red Hat. And so if you are using it for, if you want to use it for production use, then you would buy a subscription, which would entitle you to use it for those production uses. But for developers or for evaluation purposes, you can certainly download and run JBoss EAP off of the developer website at Red Hat.
Now, what's the difference between JBoss EAP, Apache Tomcat, Undertow, and the JBoss web server?
JBoss web server is our supported distribution Tomcat. So we don't try and sort of hide the fact that it's Tomcat underneath. It's the directory structure, the file naming convention. It's all that you get in upstream Tomcat. So really what we're providing is support and support for additional modules. Above and beyond the base servlet container in Tomcat itself. And then what was the second part of your question was, is it the base of everything? So no, the answer is no. In JBoss EAP, we have a base web framework called Undertow, which is another open source project, which is it's a very raw web framework. It's not a full-featured sort of Tomcat replacement, if you will. It's really designed to address a lot of the needs of enterprise EAP customers who are doing integrations with things like SSO and SSL engines, SSO engines, using data grid backends for doing things like session offloading. So Tomcat is certainly the base of JBoss web server. And again, we don't try and hide that or anything like that. It's essentially a distribution of Tomcat with enterprise support. And then JBoss EAP uses Undertow as its default web engine.
Now, I notice a big spot on the Red Hat Runtimes marketing page is a spot for Quarkus. And it seems to me that everybody from Red Hat that I talk to is super excited about Quarkus and what it brings to microservice-based environments and what it brings to JVM. What can you tell us about Quarkus?
Sure, yeah. So we released an enterprise-supported version of Quarkus in May, so back last month. We call it the Red Hat build of Quarkus. As opposed to sort of the upstream Quarkus project. So we wanted to maintain, but also have a sort of Red Hat brand to it. So Red Hat Build of Quarkus was launched in May. It is definitely something that any Java developer would be interested in because of its relationship with Kubernetes and the fact that it essentially takes the design goals and decisions made early on in the life of Java and turns them on their head, because early on in the world of Java, right, there was big iron, there was lots of memory available, and Java VMs were built to take advantage of as much of that as possible to maximize throughput. These days, when we're working on Kubernetes, the memory usage and startup speed are now much more relevant and much more important when you're looking at Kubernetes, like constrained environment deployments, like a container orchestration platform like Kubernetes, where you can't take up 4 GB. I mean, you could, but it's going to cost you a lot of money. And if it takes 10 minutes to start up, that's going to be a problem, especially if you're looking at doing things like microservices or serverless. So that's really what Quarkus brings to the Java developer, is it makes Java relevant in the age of Kubernetes and containers. Whereas before it was just dismissed as being, you know, too heavyweight or whatever.
So what is the relationship between Quarkus and the JDK? Does it replace the JDK? Does it run on top of the JDK? Does it bypass the JDK by developing native code? What exactly is Quarkus doing, and how does it work with the JDK to generate so many performance benefits?
So that's a good question. So Quarkus is designed to run on JDK. So don't let me mislead you. That is absolutely one of the target platforms. It has benefits. For example, it has higher throughput for long-running processes. It has a much better garbage collector. So over time, it's going to outperform in terms of memory management, the other way of building and deploying a Quarkus application, which is a native deployment or native compilation using Graal VM. So JDK absolutely there are use cases to use Quarkus with JDK. There are use cases to use Quarkus with Graal VM and the underlying VM called Substrate VM, which actually runs as a native binary executable. So that's really what we're looking at. If you want to compare, or if you're trying to choose right between running on a traditional JVM like OpenJDK with its hotspot, or if you're looking at doing native compilation, you're really going to be looking at a couple things. So primarily the first one that I mentioned is the long-term throughput performance gains of OpenJDK due to its better garbage collector and underlying hardware and memory to maximize throughput. So taking up more memory but getting more throughput. So if that's a requirement, then JDK might be a good choice for you. The other reason not to go down the native compilation path is if you are using libraries or frameworks that are not compatible with sort of the closed world system that that the native compilation brings, or ahead of time compilation introduces. So with ahead of time compilation, we have to know what the app's going to do at build time so that we can optimize it so that it runs well at runtime. But if it does dynamic class loading or other like reflection and things like that, and we don't know about that, we can't optimize for that at build time, and it won't work at runtime. So those are, if you're using libraries that make some of those assumptions, they might not be available. The native compilation won't be available to you, so you'd go with the OpenJDK or Java VM, traditional Java VM deployment.
Now, you mentioned Graal VM. I didn't. But I was wondering, what is the relationship between Graal VM and Quarkus? Are they complementary or are they competitors?
Sure. So, no, they're not competitors. Quarkus and Graal VM are very complementary in nature. When Quarkus was originally being formulated and designed, we saw a lot of benefit in the ahead of time compilation approach that Graal takes. And so we wanted to make sure that Quarkus worked out of the box with that style of deployment because of the, significant performance, startup time, memory usage benefit that you get out of ahead of time compilation. So we definitely wanted to make Quarkus work like that out of the box. And in fact, even today, when we add new extensions to the Quarkus framework, if they don't work in native mode, we don't release it until it does, or we design them such that we never have that problem. So it's sort of a baseline assumption in Quarkus. The thing that Graal VM does really well is ahead of time compilation. But one thing that we noticed was that even in ahead of time compilation, if you have frameworks that do a lot of runtime processing, Hibernate being a classic example here, where it builds a meta model of all of the objects that it's going to manage at runtime, if you're able to do that at build time and store that meta model generation data as a high performance index, you can get even more performance benefit. And that's something that GraalVM does not do. Graal is great at compiling, but it doesn't know about the frameworks, and it doesn't know what kinds of optimizations would make frameworks really work well. And that's what we thought with the Crocus project, bringing that on top of GraalVM would bring a whole lot of benefit to existing Java developers who are using all of these frameworks that they know and love from the last 10 years. If they can use those frameworks and they're, you know, super lightning fast, and they get a lot of benefit out of using Quarkus along with those frameworks, along with GraalVM, we would hopefully see a lot of adoption of that. And we certainly have seen that over the last last year since Quarkus was launched. So that's sort of the relationship between Quarkus and GraalVM, is they're very complementary. We work upstream in the GraalVM community. In fact, we recently contributed a feature to GraalVM to add debugging symbols to the native binaries that get produced. So you can use things like GDB to debug a natively compiled Quarkus application. So we're very much in tune with the upstream GraalVM community, and we are intending to it's a tech preview feature in GraalVM, tech preview feature in Quarkus, the ability to do native compilation, and we're looking at making that fully supported later this year.
Now, I did notice that part of Red Hat Runtimes is Open Liberty, and I know it's Open Liberty, but most people in the server-side community associate Liberty with IBM WebSphere Liberty. So where does this sort of IBM Open Liberty project fit in with all of the different Red Hat Runtimes products?
Yeah, so I think it was last summer, or maybe it was last August, we announced the addition of Red Hat Runtimes to the IBM Cloud Pack for Applications, which is one of the IBM products. And that's where the meeting of the minds happened, right? So we still have a Red Hat Runtimes product sold by Red Hat, supported by Red Hat. There's still the IBM Cloud Pack for Applications, now including both Red Hat Runtimes and OpenShift, sold by IBM, supported by IBM. We're doing a lot of work to make Red Hat Runtimes be sort of the container for these cloud native runtimes, and then including that in the IBM Cloud Pack for Applications, which also includes WebSphere, also includes their Transformation Advisor, also includes a couple of other products or components from IBM. But the fact that we've basically got this big red box in the IBM Cloud Pack for Applications sort of, we hope, sends that message that, you know, they're complementary in nature. Red Hat Runtimes is the runtimes box. All of the other things in there are either in support of WebSphere, traditional WebSphere, like WebSphere ND or Liberty, or like migrations with their Transformation Advisor. And we also recently announced, as part of this update, support for IBM Z series mainframe hardware. So Red Hat Runtimes now supports Z on OpenShift, which kind of further sends that message that this is a combined complementary offering with different use cases and different components that meet those use cases. How's that? Yeah, and IBM has been a great partner in terms of branding. Like, it's not you still see Red Hat. If you go to the IBM Cloud Pack for Apps webpage, there's a big Red Hat Runtimes box. So we do a lot of co-branding work. Even on the Open Liberty side, we have Open Liberty content on our web pages, and we do regular Open Liberty updates as well to our customers.
Now, I know I've taken up a lot of your time talking to you about Open Liberty and JBoss and Tomcat, and you probably didn't want to come in here spending all your time talking about Apache Tomcat and Undertow, and of course I picked your brain pretty heavily on Quarkus. I was just wondering if there was anything else that besides Quarkus that you wanted to push out and discuss with the enterprise software community.
I don't think so. I mean, Quarkus is really our big deal in this quarter, and that's kind of what I wanted to get. And I know you've already clearly seen it. You wrote about it already, so it's no surprise to you. But now that it's sort of fully supported, we're kind of all steam ahead on doing things like customer references and customer workshops and, you know, lead gen, demand gen campaigns and things like that around Quarkus as a product, the Red Hat Builder Quarkus. So that's a big deal. But we're also, as I mentioned, we added support for Z Series. We also, I know you've heard of MicroProfile. We have had a MicroProfile implementation in the past with Red Hat. It was called Wildfly Swarm, renamed to Thorntail. Most recently, in fact, in this update, we also added support for MicroProfile in JBoss EAP. So now EAP is sort of this Jakarta EE and MicroProfile platform for our customers. So we're continuing to advance enterprise Java in the way that our customers are expecting. You know, EAP is not dead. We're absolutely continuing to innovate on that. And then we're also using things like Quarkus for like green, you know, net new greenfield microservice and serverless development on Kubernetes. So full steam ahead on that as well. So EAP plus Quarkus.
So there you go. If you're doing microservices development, head over to JBoss Red Hat Runtimes and take a look at the Quarkus project. And of course, if you're a back-end enterprise software developer, go check out JBoss again. A lot of things have changed in the last few years, and JBoss EAP isn't exactly the same product that it was, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 years ago. So head over to Red Hat, check them out. And if you want to learn more about server-side software, check out the server side, and go ahead and follow me on Twitter, @CameronMCNZ.